Now, a small spark of hope in this tumultuous world we're living in. Last week, Robin, you spoke to Professor Jennifer Verdwin from Murdoch University about the wonders and importance of seagrass meadows. I recently spoke to another seagrass researcher from WA, Nicole Sedd from Edith Cowan University. She led a study as part of her PhD looking into how seagrasses cope with heat, and she found some potentially promising news.
I think when I first started my journey in marine science, I didn't know much about seagrasses. Like most people, I kind of thought about dugongs or turtles or even coral reefs. But as I started to learn more about seagrasses, I just was so interested in them. They're such special plants.
What makes them special?
So seagrasses are exactly the same as the plants that we have on land, except they grow under water in the ocean. They have leaves, roots, rhizomes, flowers, and they're actually more closely related to the plants that we have on land, like the ones that grow in our backyard, like lilies and orchids, than seaweeds that also grow in the ocean.
You and your colleagues recently studied different species of seagrasses that live along the Western Australian coast. Why did you choose to focus on those West Coast species?
As the ocean is warming, Western Australia is one of those regions that is a hotspot for warming. And we're also seeing more intense and frequent marine heat waves here. So essentially hotter warmers that are lasting for longer periods of time. So marine heat waves, you can kind of think about them as underwater bushfires. So it's an intense period of heat that warms up the ocean quite quickly, and they can last for weeks to months.
When you say heats up the ocean, what temperatures are we talking about here?
It can get up to temperatures up to 5 degrees above average. And 5 degrees may not sound as much in air temperatures, but in the ocean, temperatures are generally quite stable. So an increase in 5 degrees at that rapid rate can be really impactful for the ecosystems and the things living below the ocean.
Mm. Well, I imagine, you know, if my internal body temperature went up by 5 degrees rapidly, that would be a terrible thing.
Yeah, not great. And unfortunately, in Western Australia, we have had some devastating marine heatwave impacts. And so there's one location in particular, Shark Bay, and there was a marine heatwave that happened in 2010. And it's one of the largest seagrass meadows in the world in Shark Bay. And we lost about 25% of our seagrasses from the single marine heatwave event that happened. We lost 75,000 football fields worth of seagrass in that one marine heatwave event. So pretty devastating impacts.
What does a dead seagrass plant look like?
Yeah, it kind of looks like just sticks sticking out of the sediment. Brown sticks, brown leaves on the ground. Like you can imagine leaves falling from the tree in your backyard. There's lots of dead leaves in the sediment. Pretty sombering.
Yeah, very obviously dead. What effect does that have on the wider ecosystem and the communities that live within the seagrasses?
Because that happened so long ago, 15 years ago, those meadows are still recovering. They still haven't recovered from that marine heatwave event entirely, but they have shown some recovery. And there are researchers working and community as well working to help restore these meadows. But we know that from that marine heatwave event that there were fishery closures, and those fisheries were still not, haven't been able to open, affected the food source for turtles and dugongs, and also has an effect on the community that live there that is so close within that area as well.
So for your study, you wanted to test how well different seagrass species from different areas could tolerate heat. How do you test that?
So what we did is that we wanted to look at, well, how are these seagrasses going to be impacted from these temperature events? And so we can look at thermal tolerance. And that essentially is, at what temperatures are these seagrass species happiest, and at what temperatures may kill them?
How do you find that out? Is it just a matter of plonking them in baths of different temperatures?
So what we did is that we got these little closed and sealed chambers and put the seagrass species in that and measured their oxygen and then ramped the temperature up to temperatures that may make them happy, and then continuing that temperature increase to ones that would kill them.
What does the oxygen tell you?
It gives us a measure of their photosynthesis or their productivity. So how much energy are they kind of creating in a way?
Okay, so you've got your little chambers and your various seagrasses and you're ramping up the heat. What did you discover?
So if I focus in on one seagrass species, Posidonia, it's about the size of your arm, big and green, kind of waves around. And it grows from Shark Bay in Western Australia all the way around the southern coast up to New South Wales. And so what we might think is that that one species could potentially have the same ability to tolerate temperature impacts across its range. But that's not what we found. We found that in some locations, it was able to tolerate heat better than in other locations. And then from that, we thought, okay, if this one seagrass species can tolerate heat better hundreds of kilometres away, what about just kilometres away right next door? And so then we looked at the heat tolerance of this same species kilometres away, and we also found that they had different abilities to withstand temperature impacts. And that's really important because it now means that even just meadows growing right next door may fare better under marine heatwave conditions. And so potentially we can use those more heat tolerant meadows to build resilience into those less tolerant meadows.
Like basically transplanting the ones that might have some genetic edge over others when it comes to those heat waves.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, how would you be able to, I don't know, I imagine it's sort of similar to transplanting turf on land, kind of hoik them all up by the roots and the soil and plonk them down elsewhere. How do you transplant seagrass?
Exactly that. You gently pick them up. A lot of people have focused in on this research area in particular as well, different ways of planting them, like the spacing is really important. The way you plant them, where you plant them. And you can't just plant seagrasses in any old spot. You kind of want to target areas where they've been living before. So areas where they've been lost and where we can restore those areas with these more thermally tolerant plants because they grew there before, so potentially they can grow there again.
Are there any plans to try to transplant some of the more heat tolerant seagrasses and see if they do okay in a neighbouring meadow?
Yes, that's the next thing that we want to work on. We're going to start to roll out some of those trials before we start to try to scale it up in restoration efforts. And even with scaling it up, moving plants, there are some policy issues with that as well. So hopefully policy starts to change to align with some of these larger global issues such as climate change as well to be able to facilitate that.
Nicole said, who's studying seagrasses for a PhD at Edith Cowan University.